You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and I'm joined again today by co-host Tom Costanzo. Tom, how you doing?
Pretty well, Alan. Thanks for having me again.
Hey, glad to have you here. Our guest today is Dori Francis. She's the founder of Horizon Family Solutions, an educational consulting firm in Bend, Oregon. She's a sworn officer of the court, providing advocacy for children who are victims of abuse or neglect, and the host of Trouble Teen Talk, right here on LA Talk Radio. Dori, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you, Alan.
Oh, it's really good to have you.
And hi, Tom.
Yeah, Dori, actually, we've met before. You were at the ASUS 25th, I believe.
Do you remember correct.
Remember being attacked by the llamas, more specifically being spit at by the llamas?
I do have a recollection of that happening, yes.
Did you have to throw away your clothes, too? Because it doesn't come out.
Yes, the shirt that I had on, I ended up using for a rag because it never came out.
Perfect choice.
Uh-huh. So, Dori, tell me a little bit of how your show is going. I've had a chance to listen a little bit. I'm so glad to have you. And for those that that don't know, her show follows this show, and it allows people to kind of continue that part of dealing with family issues, dealing with sometimes with your troubled teens. So how's it going for you?
You know, Alan, I've been really pleased with, number one, the guests that I've had on the show. Many different varieties from, you know, wilderness programs to those working in a holistic environment, to having a cyberbully specialist on. And so the feedback I've gotten anyway is that people are enjoying the information and like the variety. So thanks for asking. It's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it myself.
Well, and I'm glad to hear that. And I know that, well, I'm enjoying it, and I know some of our listeners are, because I get feedback as well from people that have called and talked about whatever our subject was and said that they've also enjoyed listening to your show as well. So glad to have you.
Thank you.
And actually, and speaking of listeners that have called or emailed in, we have some listener questions as well. So I want to make sure that I get to those, and if I don't, please remind me, because I always want to make sure. I didn't do that one time, and I got a nasty gram saying that if they went to the trouble to ask the question, I need to make sure that I get it done. Now I also checked out your website a little bit. We've looked at a lot of stuff. Tell us a little bit about your website, and the kind of things you're doing with it.
Well, I have two websites, Alan. One is horizonfamilysolutions.com, which is really geared towards families who are looking for the services of an educational consultant or advocate. And my second website, which just launched in January of this year, is called Troubled Teen Help. And it is a website for parents and professionals. Hopefully, that's the information that I have on there. Articles, some reading, breaking news, conference calendars, local resources. We recently added a missing teens link, so people can send that information, and once it's verified, it will be put up on the site. So the programs that are advertising on the site also have to go through a kind of a background check. The focus of the site is to make sure that everybody is up and running in a safe mode of operation, is currently licensed and accredited and doesn't have any current pending legal aspects going on, so that parents can feel whichever program they might look at on the site, that they can feel safe in that there's been a preliminary background check done on them.
Sounds pretty comprehensive. One thing I noticed on the website about the book you're writing, One Size Does Not Fit All. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I actually had intended originally for that book to be out this year, One Size Does Not Fit All, talking about how many different types of treatment centers and wilderness programs are available. For parents to understand that there are those who specialize in certain areas, and obviously there is no just one program who can take and work with and assist every single child, because the needs are so diverse. In interviewing many programs for the last 2 years, unfortunately during our economic situation, a lot of the programs that I interviewed are now no longer in business.
No kidding.
Yes, and it's unfortunate because, you know, as you know, Alan, there were some really great programs that have had to close, and that's been sad. So I've kind of pulled back on holding off on that to kind of see how things settle down in the industry, and have restructured the book to be released next year instead. And then we'll continue interviewing some of the programs that I'm going to talk about in the book.
Well, and I think that's great. And there are still, as you said, there's still many really good programs out there. And things are going to change. You know, there's going to be changes. And I think that your book sounds like, I mean, it's going to be something that even as you're writing, there's going to be newer, more innovative programs coming out. So I think we'll be looking forward to that.
Yes, and I am going to make the book in an ebook format as well, so that obviously, I'll tell you, writing a book is a lot harder than I thought. But I don't want to be doing this every year. So the ebook, which will be online then, can be updated on a yearly basis, and people will have a reference to that. Because, as you know, things change all the time. People in a program can change. Maybe they get a new executive director or new clinical director, and the goal is to have that information be as up-to-date as possible.
Now, are you going to tailor this more towards parents or more towards other professionals, so, or both?
It's actually tailored towards both. It was professionals that actually prompted me into writing the book, especially therapists who don't have the opportunity, as I do, to go out and visit these programs and meet the staff and see the facilities. And they have also gotten a little leery about just sending parents to the internet. Also, they've started to realize that just because one program worked really well for one of their clients doesn't mean that that same program is going to work well for all of their clients. And so they wanted some input and reference on how they can help direct parents as well, and breaking down the different categories. You know, the different categories have gotten so extensive that they're having, you know, difficulty trying to figure out what it all means.
Yeah, that leads into a question I had for you. I was going to ask you about the process that you use in identifying or, you know, coming up with a suggestion for a placement. Do you focus more on, say, a specific facility, or you work more like, let's find the right genre, whether that be wilderness, RTC, emotional growth, you know, how do you work?
You know, Tom, when a family first contacts me, I kind of let them tell their story first. You know, there is a story there that needs to be told, and I oftentimes find out that they just haven't really had anybody really want to listen to everything that's gone on. And then they also feel like everybody's heard it before. But I find in listening that I pick up nuances on little things that can really make a difference to that family and that child, something that might be important to them or important about the situation that's going on. Mm-hmm. So we have a pretty in-depth conversation in the beginning. I don't have what I call a group of schools or programs that I just work with. I have a wide variety, and I really do look at matching as much as possible what that child needs for their progress, and whether that's both wilderness and residential, or just wilderness sometimes, or just residential sometimes. Well, Dory, it's on a case-by-case basis.
Well, Dory, do you find that that there are special areas that you seem to attract most, you know, like adopted or a specific type of family or a specific type of challenge?
I do. I tend to attract what I call the more clinically dependent kids, or a little bit more difficult challenges. A lot of the kids that I'm working with now are internationally adopted, and they come with a whole set of different backgrounds and experiences which need to be addressed. I also work with a lot of kids that have gone through major depression and maybe cutting, or are very clinical in other ways. And I also attract a lot of kids who have some very unusual health challenges. You know, whether it's somebody who's 17 and still a bedwetter, or others identifying medical challenges which maybe have just come to light in their older adolescent years. So I really like to support those families.
It works well. A question that comes up all the time when I'm talking to people, are there any red flags you look for specifically in a program, something that you would be able to tell a parent, you know, if you see this going on, hang up, walk away, call me back? and so I'm being very serious about that, because there's things going on out there that are, you know, pretty horrifying. What do you look for in the area of red flags?
You know, what I always tell parents is, when you're viewing their website, number one, you want to make sure that there's a staff page, that there's a street address, that there's identifying information about the program, and that when you're calling, you are able to ask to speak with the executive director, the clinical director, the academic director. A red flag for me is what I call these multi-level marketing situations, where there may be a large call center and parents call in and they're speaking to someone who's kind of working off a script, so to speak, to kind of hook the parent in crisis and get them to make an immediate decision about getting their child into a particular program. And that, for me, is a huge red flag.
You know, and actually you guys both bring up a good point. And we, looking at it from the transport side, I mean, we get calls now from parents who are finding things over the internet. And they will inevitably ask, so what do you think of this program? And we have a way in which we deal with that. If it is not a program we have dealt with or we have not transported to, you know, we will tell them we don't know anything about it. We haven't transported there. And in some cases, we will decide that we're too busy and just not do it. And then they will ask. One parent asked, and I thought it was a brilliant question. And they said they were asking about a program that is one that you deal with, and I'm sure that, you know, it's a wonderful program out there and that we go to quite often. And they said, you know, is this a good program? I said, yeah, it's absolutely a good program. And they had an educational consultant that had referred them. I said, it's a great program. And the parents said, what would you have told me if it wasn't? And I said, I said, that's a great answer. And I will tell you what, I said, we have gotten programs that we do not transport to. And I said, and I would have told you, when you first mentioned it, before you asked what type of program it was, I would have said, you know, I'm sorry, we're real busy, and it sounds like you want this done next Friday. We're not going to be able to help you. And if you would have said, what about the following Tuesday? No, you know what? We're busy at that point also. So we're not going to, the bottom line for us, or our rule of thumb is that we need to already have an existing relationship where we're transporting to that program, or they, you know, I would ask them, okay, you know, I can contact that program and find out what ed consultants have toured this facility. Who else can I talk to that's within the industry that I know and trust that's going to tell me they've been there? Just because I haven't been there doesn't mean it's a bad place. But if someone like yourself or one of the other you know, ed consultants or professional in this industry, if they've been there, we're okay with it. So, you know,
I appreciate that, Alan, because I do believe, you know, that it takes a collaborative effort sometimes when assisting a family, and because there can be so many pieces in, you know, from your piece of having the child, you know, safely brought to the situation where they're getting help, to the actual program, everybody involved, you know, I would like to see more people such as yourself kind of setting the standards for what you believe is in a child's best interest. And I just, you know, I can't thank you enough for, you know, kind of taking that stand within your company and really making that a part of your decision.
Well, go ahead.
Along those lines, I just lost my thought. When you're looking at a program, do you see any new trends as far as treatment and any new trends as far as kids behaviorally that we haven't addressed in the past? Is there anything coming up that you're seeing more and more of that you wouldn't have seen, say, 10, 15 years ago? And then the same thing as far as from the treatment standpoint. Are you seeing changes there, you know, behavior mod versus peer culture versus, you know, what are you seeing? Give us a little input on that.
Sure. You know, I know that there's, I've had many discussions with people about what's called the, you know, the old behavior modification model, level system, point system. And honestly, Tom, I just don't feel that it works anymore.
It might
work with a younger child who's got, deep-rooted attachment issues and really needs to have their day programmed for them. But the kids that I've been seeing in the last 8 years and even most readily in the last 2 years, these kids are sophisticated. Mm-hmm. They are being exposed to information and technology that is way beyond their emotional or social IQ level for their age. And I'm also seeing that a lot of kids are extremely intuitive and very gifted early on. And for a lot of parents, they're not comfortable in knowing how to support, you know, a different child. I have seen some programs doing some really neat things. There's a couple that have been involved with using material from the Arbinger Clinic, which I really like. There are those that have updated their family component and have more family involvement, which I really like. I don't think having the kids separated from their parents, either physically or, you know, even phone call-wise for long periods of time is beneficial. So I am seeing some shifts in the industry, and it's slowly coming about in that some of these programs are collaborating with each other and supporting each other in ways that they're looking at viewing the kids that are coming in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still seeing from a therapeutic standpoint in the outside world and even in the special education world that they're wanting to, you know, label these kids early and get them on medication so that they feel they can be controlled. And I just am really concerned about how much that is happening.
I guess with enough medication, every kid's going to behave. You just have, you know, just medicate them into robot-like existence, I guess,
yep,
is what you're saying.
Yeah, you know, make it easy for the parents to handle them, make it easy for the therapist to handle them. And I'm not saying therapy is not good, so let's not get a whole bunch of emails saying, right. Oh, my God. You know,
yes, please.
Therapy is absolutely wonderful. And there are all different kinds of therapy for different kinds of situations. But when I see a kid who's been going to a therapist for 5-6 years, and is on 2-3-4 medications, and they're 16 years old, I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, because a trend that I'm starting to see among the more sophisticated programs is an effort to titrate kids off of these drugs. You know, when they come in, as you said, there are 4, 5, 6 drugs, some of which are working, you know, counter each other. I don't know if you're seeing that same thing. I think it's healthy that we're not just immediately throwing lithium down the kid's system so he'll behave all day long.
Right. I agree with you, Tom, that I, you know, I am seeing more and more programs take an interest in the types of medication the kids are coming in on and having those discussions with the parents and maybe with the at-home therapist to see what can be done to lessen the amount of medication that they're taking, because it's difficult for a program to get a real baseline idea of a child and what really might be going on with them if they're medicated all the time.
No question.
Now, and along those lines, Dory, you mentioned earlier about sort of an increase in the attachment disorder. Are you seeing a shift to more of home care? And if so, is it because of that, or is it just more of an economic situation?
Well, obviously, you know, with the economics and with the changes that have happened in the loan aspect of, you know, parents,
right.
Being able to get, you know, what were originally called educational loans, and also a lot of parents were taking money out of their homes, like a second and so forth. That's all been cut back. So people are looking at alternatives, things that they can try at home first, engage in at home first. I think the difficulty is, you know, at least for me, unfortunately, by the time they call me, they've waited past that time where things are in crises. Either the child's been arrested or somebody's been hurt or they're on the street, and then it's really hard to do an at-home program once it's escalated to that point. But I think educating parents about, you know, continuous education about what to look for and how to create things in home. You know, Alan, honestly, I've been saying for years the greatest gift I could ever receive would be to be put out of business. I would love it if we never, ever had to have a child have to be placed out of the home in residential treatment.
Well, and thank you. I've actually made that same quote myself, so I agree completely. You know, you mentioned a little bit about them contacting you too late after they've been adjudicated. I think that will lead into my first listener question that came in, and again, I appreciate those questions. That's why we're putting the information out there of who's coming up on the guests so that we can get these. This particular one says, in an earlier press release, you mention your guest as a sworn officer of the court, helping victims of abuse and neglect. That is what I would like to do in my community. How would I go about becoming that type of court advocate?
Actually, there is an organization called CASA, C-A-S-A, which is Court Appointed Special Advocates. They are all over the country in every single state. It is a volunteer situation. You go through extensive training, which helps you learn about what's going on with these kids today, what's going on with the families. These are very heartbreaking cases. Most of the time, these children have been removed from the home and are in foster care or are in juvenile detention because things have escalated both with the parents and with the home situation. And advocating on the child's behalf, you become the child's voice through the situation and the system and in court. And I've been a member of CASA in California before I moved to Oregon, and then also here. And it's one of the most heartfelt things that I think anybody can do who would be interested in assisting with and working with children. And I know they have a website. I think it's CASA.org.
Right. And I'm familiar with CASA as well. It is an excellent organization. Tom?
Yeah, I had a question. When we were talking earlier about red flags to look for in identifying a program, would there be anything, obviously you're going to be advocating for the student, monitoring the situation, any of the things that the parents should look for themselves in red flags as far as when their kid is at a facility? Is there something that they would look at and say, that just doesn't feel right? Any ideas up front about the kind of things they should be looking for to either increase their comfort zone or make them wonder, maybe I should go back to my consultant and talk to them about this?
Well, first of all, if they're working with an educational consultant, I would hope that any time that they felt like something wasn't right, I always tell parents, trust your intuition. It's better to be on top of that and then find out you had nothing to worry about than to ignore it and let it go and then find out later that you really needed to speak up. So just in speaking for myself, if a family calls me and feels that they have a concern about something, I will look into that for them or maybe be able to explain it to them in a way that they'll understand. But for somebody who maybe is not working with a consultant, some of the things that I look for is the amount of communication you have with your child. As I said before, I'm not a big supporter of these programs who say, you cannot speak to your child. I've heard of some going 2, 3, 4, 5 months without a phone call. Just being able to write them letters, as well as visitation.
Sorry to cut you off. What would you say would be a reasonable amount of time to let the kids settle in and get used to the idea that, I'm in, East whatever. I have no idea why I'm here. I'm very angry. What do you think is a reasonable amount of time to let the kids settle in where there isn't a lot of contact between the family and the child? Or do you have a number?
Obviously, Tom, wilderness is different than residential.
Sure.
Because in wilderness, you don't have a telephone.
There's no electric. Yeah, you can't plug it into a tree.
Yeah, and that is explained to the parents up front that you are not going to be having communication, and here's why that is set up that way, and here's how you're going to be communicating, and here's who you're going to be talking to each week. And so, any parent that places their child in wilderness and has an expectation of weekly phone calls has not asked enough questions or talked to the right people. But in residential, I think it really varies on the situation with the child. I've seen it be as little as 2 weeks, as much to 30 days. But I would not want to see anything. I don't like to see anything more than 30 days of restricted phone contact.
Well, and then going along the lines of contact, how often do you visit the kids while they're at their programs?
I go out and visit all of my kids in their programs. I try and see all of them when they're in wilderness. Obviously, they're scattered all over, so sometimes that's difficult to do because wilderness is a short-term situation. If I know they're only going to be doing wilderness and going home, then I definitely get out there to see them. And then I do go visit them in their residential treatment centers. And some kids I may just see once or twice while they're there. I've got families who request that I go out and see their child every quarter and meet with their therapist and educational director and so forth. So if a family really wants that to happen, I am happy to do that.
So, in other words, your follow-up is pretty extensive. You stay very involved with the family. Would there be an average length of time that you spend with the family, say, from moment of contact to, doing the due diligence on the program, the placement, monitoring the program while the child there is, then what happens in the aftercare? I mean, are you involved in all of those phases? And about what's your average length of involvement with the family, time-wise?
Well, again, it's on an individual needed basis. If a child is going into wilderness and then going home, I do like to assist the family with an at-home plan. You know, whether it's connecting them with a service or a wraparound team or helping them with a home contract or whatever might be needed. For a wilderness client, I'm usually on board anywhere between 2 and 3 months. For somebody who's in residential, I had one client that I actually worked with for 3 years. Their child had extensive medical and clinical needs, and it took quite a long time, you know, before they were ready to come home, and the family had me stay on board the entire time. So it really is a case-by-case situation. But I like to do what I call full circle, you know, starting with the contact with me, working with the transport company such as Allen, going through wilderness, going through residential, and then going through the aftercare program. I really like to do the full circle to see the completion of this family and the child.
Well, that's excellent. And one of the questions that I know I get, and when we refer out to an ed consultant, and oftentimes the family will ask, I mean, what ages do they work with? You know, and they may have problems with their teenager, but they may also have problems with their 10-year-old. So, I mean, either you specifically or generally, I mean, what ages do you work with then?
You know, I actually am starting to work with younger kids in the last 2 years. My youngest client to date has been 7, which is sad. Sure. And, you know, but I've also worked with older adults. I recently assisted somebody who was 35. And so I think my oldest client to date, though, actually was 60.
Oh, well, then, well, but that's good. That means there's still time to get me or Tom in, okay?
You know, sometimes people wait later in life before asking for help. So,
oh, I'm so sad for that person to think, you know, to have lived, you know, I'm not going to ask about the situation, but to me it seems kind of sad to have lived with whatever they lived with for 60 years.
It is. I mean, most of my, what I would call my older adult clients are those who are needing to go into, you know, alcohol and drug rehab. Maybe they've never, ever approached needing help before. And again, they're starting to feel so overwhelmed with all of the ads and everything that are out there. They're not quite sure where to turn. And it's great that they're finally reaching out. Others have maybe been, you know, in rehab several times and it hasn't worked, and they're wondering if they're not choosing the right place for them based on their needs. And so, you know, I always open the door to anybody who calls.
Quick question for you, totally off the subject, just jumped into my head. It's part of my ADD. How do you respond? I get this same question all the time. I'm sure you do too. Parent calls you up, and the first thing out of their mouth is, I want my child in a boot camp. How do you respond to that?
My response is, you know, first of all, I ask them, why? Mm-hmm. Why is it that you're saying that, and what is your understanding of what a boot camp has to offer? Many parents are angry at their child, that they're angry at the situation, and they have that old stigma in their head, the scared straight type of situation where, you know, if we put them in these tough military type boot camps and kick their butts, you know, it's going to get their attention.
I'm so happy to hear that. Yeah.
Yes. Honestly, if a parent absolutely says, yes, that's what I want, I say to them, I do not recommend boot camps. I feel that they humiliate the child and degrade them. And these kids have enough in their life that's doing that already. So I don't want to add to it. And I ask them if they're open to hearing about other possibilities. If they're just absolutely determined that that's what they want, I just let them know that I am not the right person to assist them.
Okay, well, but what if I want to send Tom to a boot camp? Would that be okay?
Yeah, can I go?
ask me that again?
I said, but what if I want to send Tom to a boot camp? He's over 18.
I've got a good one for Tom.
There you go.
It's filled with llamas.
There you go.
That's what I want.
He wants the llama
connection.
That's
exactly what I'm looking for. Oatmeal for breakfast and llama spit for lunch.
Yeah.
Yeah. But,
well, and then when we were talking about ages, I mean, you know, I realized, I mean, there's a variety of services out there, but I mean, how do you deal differently with a family that comes to you that has a problem with their 16-year-old versus now you have someone coming to you with a 35-year-old? You know, what's the differences in how you deal with one family versus the other?
Well, obviously every family dynamic, number one, is different. You know, when you're dealing with an adolescent, the families obviously are able to make some choices that the adolescent doesn't necessarily get to be a part of if the situation has, you know, reached a crisis stage. When a family calls me and says, you know, I have a 20-year-old or I have a 30-year-old, you're dealing with an adult, and they may not seem like an adult emotionally based on choices that they're making, but legally they are an adult, and they have to agree to the process and be a part of that. So really helping the family grasp hold of that idea that they are not going to be able to rush in and control the situation is really difficult for them to grasp, especially if they're still living in their home.
Well, or the other side of this, and just a quick story on my end, are the ones that have moved across country and they have fallen off the wagon or whatever, or the family will hire us, and I have to explain to them, just as you're saying, they are an adult. They can make their own decisions. But I got to tell you that I've had multiple times in which we've gone to them, we've sat down with them, talked to them, and I've given them the document to sign, the one that, if they were a child, that the parent would sign. But they've signed it. And I've had multiple times I've been on the airplane, and they've started to go through a little bit of a withdrawal, and they've looked over at me and said, you know, you're lucky. You're lucky I signed that thing, because if I hadn't signed that, I'd be out of here. Swear to you, that has happened. So the interesting thing is just the fact that they signed that particular sheet of paper. You know, I mean, between all of us, I mean, we know that they're an adult. They can tear it up. But it's interesting that just that bit of structure to where we're going to do this, but you have to sign this. And upon signing this, we're going to take you to the XYZ, whatever program, that whatever goes through their mind, at least they are somehow convinced that they have to follow through at least that to that point.
And, Alan, I find a lot of these young adults really are aware that they need some type of assistance. It's much harder to make that adult decision when you're a young adult. You really want to feel like you can control everything in your life and make it all better. But many of them that I've met with and spoken to, you know, have admitted that they knew they needed some help. Number one, they didn't want their parents to feel like they were failing, or they didn't want to look like they were failing in their eyes, and so it was really difficult to admit that they needed help. But, you know, once they take that first step and know it's not going to be easy, and yeah, there's going to be days when you feel like you're going to want to turn around and walk out of there, but when they really make that commitment to, I want my life to be better than what it is, you know, they're in a group of other adults that are there for the same reason and have chosen to be there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll tell you what. On that note, I want to take a quick break. So if you can hold for just a second, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in 1 minute. And at that time, we have a question for Dory in regards to a listener who has written in about their 16-year-old son. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. We're back with Dori Francis. And we have a question from a listener that says, my 16-year-old son is getting out of juvenile hall at the end of this month. And then they have in parentheses, he was caught using and selling marijuana at his school. His school says he's not welcome back. What are my options to get him in a high school?
Well, if depending on the school's rules that they have, nowadays a lot of them have zero tolerance rules, but if the child was suspended from school, they do have the right to return. If the child was expelled from school, that's a different situation, and the parents would have had to been notified and would have had an opportunity to attend an expulsion hearing. So the first thing is determining how the child was left from the school and how long they've been gone to see whether they were suspended or whether they were expelled. But children cannot be denied education. So depending on where they live in the community that they're in and the school district that they're in, the child may not be able to return to the exact same high school they were in. But if there are other schools in their district, they will be able to enroll in school.
Okay. And, you know, and I was thinking the same thing when I saw it, but I completely agree with you. And they use the term not welcome back. And of course, we know that, like you said, you know, they have an obligation. It's interesting that they didn't provide, most of them have like a continuing education or some sort of another level of schooling that they can send them to.
Absolutely. I mean, there's even independent study at home. There's sometimes satellite schools in the area. The district office in their area should have plenty of information for them on options for their child.
Okay.
Actually, I'm kind of, you know, I had 3 pages of questions here, Dori. I asked about 5 of them, and you were so proactive that you answered most of them to begin with. About the only thing that I have left would be if you were to design a program for yourself, money being no object, what are 4 or 5 things that you think are absolutely essential for a residential treatment program that they have to be there? If they're not there, you would never recommend it. Things that just have to be in place if you were going to design your own program.
Wow. Are you going to write me a check?
Yeah, sure. What do you need?
You know, and I'm sure you ask this question to many people, and everybody has a different idea on what they would be looking for. You know, ideally, some of the things I look for, number one, are the aesthetics of the program, where they're located, and, you know, is there a safety factor there for the kids? Obviously, we know sometimes these kids run, and, you know, how are they set up and well-guarded for that situation? The second thing is, you know, staff. You have to have people who are passionate about working with these kids, and that, you know, goes everywhere from the top on down. So having good paid staff and well-trained staff is very important. For me, what I look for, especially in residential, is how the rooms are set up. if the kids are made to feel comfortable, if they are made to be in a way that they are respected. And I get it that they're not total angels at the time, but I just believe in dignity and respect for everyone, and how that's portrayed is very important. Food, healthy diets, having a nutritionist or dietitian on board, and making sure that, you know, the kids are learning their own healthy eating habits, and that could be from cooking to grocery shopping to picking out food to how to read labels. Kids nowadays, it's a quick world, and they grab what's ready, and they have no concept of what they're putting into their bodies, and I really think helping them learn about that is beneficial. And I guess the last thing would be the educational component, and really making sure that there's art and music and sports, as well as the traditional types of education, and allowing them to explore the creative side. Because, as you know, many of the kids in residential are extremely creative and have not been encouraged to use, you know, their knowledge in that area in an open way.
I couldn't agree more. That there needs to be some enrichment activities, extracurriculars, whatever you want to call them. It can't be 8 hours of schoolwork and 8 hours of therapy and go to bed and then get up and do it all over again the next day.
You know, well, it can be, but your results won't be very good.
Right. And you're not going to have a very happy student.
Right.
No.
Now, for everybody listening out there, okay, send your checks in to fund this program. You've now heard the outline. The business plan will be started. No, in fact, actually, with the way this economy is, it's probably the worst time to try to start a program, even though that would be a great one. Which actually brings me to another question. In this economy, I mean, would you recommend to young people now interested in educational consulting to enter this field? Or if it's something they were looking at, a way that they might be able to get into it and still feel that they can make a living?
Wow. That's, you know, it's tough. I've been doing this for about 17 years, Alan. You know, there's educational consultants that are independent and small like myself. There are also those that have, you know, larger staffs and multiple people. There is a great organization called IECA, which is Independent Educational Consultants Association. And when somebody calls me and says that they have an interest in being an ed consultant, I always refer them to their website. I know that they have a training institute, that they have conferences, and I think for somebody who really wants to get the whole picture in a realistic way, that would be the place to go to get information. And then you would also be able to network and market with very many different types of educational consultants to see where you might fit.
Yeah, that's a great point. And actually, if you go to our website, it's answers, the numeral for thefamily.com. There is a link to the IECA link. You can link to them and contact them to get any further information in regards to that. And speaking of how to get a hold of things, Dory, tell everybody again how they can get a hold of you, if they have any additional questions, if this parent who said that their 16-year-old's getting out of juvenile hall, if they have any other questions or more in-depth question about that, how can they get a hold of you?
Sure. They can call my toll-free number, which is 866-833-6911. And that's actually teen911. They can also email me at Dory, D-O-R-E, at Dory Francis, DoreFrancess.com. I have two websites, HorizonFamilySolutions.com and TroubledTeenHelp.com. And there are links there to contact me as well.
Well, Dory, thank you so much. I appreciate I know you have to get ready because your show is going to be starting soon.
Thank you.
So, everybody, stick around. In about 10 minutes, you will have Dory's trouble teen talk. I think that's the coming up in about 10 minutes. So stay with us, and we will be back with Tom here in just a second.
I just wanted to thank Dory again.
Okay.
For the tremendous amount of great information and right on the money as far as I'm concerned.
All right. Tom, thanks again for being here. You had some great questions, and I hope that you will do it again.
I'll be back.
And do it again soon. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. We will be signing off and hope you will stay with us here at LA Talk Radio as Dory's show will be up shortly.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.